This episode is brought to you by the House of Chanel.
If Gabrielle Chanel's life were a playlist, it would start with the hymns of her childhood and jump to the cabaret that gave her the nickname Coco. Next up, a bel canto aria played on her own grand piano, and of course, the Beatles live in London with jazz and blues and Johnny Hallyday and Stravinsky in between. The playlist would close with a song from Coco, the Broadway musical that starred Katharine Hepburn in the title role. Watch the film that explores this eclectic, refined musical journey on InsideChanel.com.
5, 6, 7, 8. I'm in the gut and my whip all black. Yes, I blend right in, come my paint on man. Welcome to the New York Times Podcast, your widest whale of music news and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica. Before we get into this week's conversation, I want to say thank you to everybody who last week came through for what I think is the inaugural Clubhouse Q&A chat for podcast listeners. A lot of folks came through, a lot of really good questions. You know, who didn't come through is Karen Gans, but Karen Gans is here right now. Karen, before we switch hats today, why did you not come to the Clubhouse chat?
There are some social platforms, John, that I don't engage with. And at the moment, I'm not going to rule it out. It's a never say never. At the moment, Clubhouse is one that I am not engaging with, along with Facebook. Apologies to our podcast Facebook group, who I hear are the best people in the world.
Why don't you just insult them by just literally straight up being like, your two platforms are not valid to me? That's just why don't you just name them all and insult them directly? Jeez.
As briefly as I can tell this, many years ago, I wrote a story for the New York Post about not being on Friendster. So when Facebook arrived, I really felt like it was just an extension of Friendster, and I'd be hypocritical if I joined. And that was, what, 20-something years ago. So that's why we're here.
That is fair. Friendster, for those who don't know, was an early social network. I do feel like there are maybe listeners who do not know that Friendster was ever a thing. So
okay, it was Friendster was like Facebook. A
proto-Facebook, basically. Well, Karen, there was a question about Hayley Williams and your expertise was missed. So maybe next time. Okay.
Oh, next time you should just text me and I'll call you on my landline.
It crossed my mind. It did cross my mind, but I was using my phone. That's the thing. The Clubhouse is on the phone. So you would have had nowhere to call me except my secret landline. And that would have been just too much going on in that technologically. This week, we're going to talk about TikTok. And when I say we, I mean me.
Way to reveal that to the audience before we even start. That's like giving away the trick.
You know, like all the gender reveal parties where like the cake explodes and people get injured. That was my version of that, except for subject reveal. It's a little messy, a little sloppy. Karen is going to be doing the interviewing. I wrote a piece recently about the TikTok remix, the major label TikTok remix as a marketing tactic. But really, obviously, I spent a lot of the last 12 months thinking about TikTok and the ways that record labels are trying to take advantage of it, are trying to manipulate it, are trying to game the system. And even though last year we did an episode, me and Taylor Lorenz, talking about a little bit of this stuff preliminarily, so much has happened in the last 6 months that it's time to revisit it. Karen, being the curious editor who has shepherded many of these pieces through the woods out into the world, is the correct interlocutor for me to draw all this stuff out of me, right?
Of course.
So, well, first of all, I do want to say at the beginning, what we were listening to was the Adderall Corvette Corvette remix. So that's the Pop Hunter record. And I'm sure if you're on TikTok, you know the dance. And that's the remix with Lil Uzi Vert, which to my mind is one of the more natural sounding of the kind of superstar shows up to ride someone else's wave TikTok remixes. There's been a lot of those. I made like a playlist in Spotify. I've got, how many do I have? Maybe there's like 20 or so that I have of varying levels of importance. So I was keeping an eye on this over the last few months of last year and the first few months of this year. And the piece that I wrote was pegged to the Travis Scott remix of Erykah Banks's Buss It, which we should actually maybe just listen to a second of. Buss it, pop it, lock it, drop it. We going up like the stock it, outside it, inside the Lambo is chocolate. So the notable thing about Buss It is actually sort of based, or at least deploys, a Nelly sample. And the song Busted itself is like, maybe not that good, the rest of the song. But then Travis Scott shows up and literally just like turns it into a Travis Scott song. So it's like a good example of how someone with more clout, more power, more authority, more radio presence can basically suffocate a small rising thing and kind of absorb it into their own brand.
So what you're saying here, John, if I'm interpreting this correctly, is that perhaps big stars and the major labels are not completely sure how to master a platform like TikTok that emphasizes and privileges the unknown.
Yeah.
So the way it weasels its way in, perhaps, is by sort of figuring out what's on the rise and glomming on.
I think that they kind of have no choice, because the thing about TikTok that's kind of baked into the algorithm is there's a certain percentage that's higher than almost any other discovery app, of any other social app, I should say, of uncertainty and spontaneity and unlikeliness. So it's not like Spotify, where when new music comes out on Friday, all the big playlists are preloaded with music from the biggest artists. It's not like that. So what often will happen on TikTok is a song from, or a snippet rather, from a unknown or a relative unknown will get a little bit of traction through like dance skits or comedy skits. And because of that, the song kind of gets big, but the person behind the song is maybe not totally known. And I think what's happening with labels is they're just like, all right, we're going to sign this. Like, we're going to sign this guy. We're going to sign this girl. We have no idea what to do, but like, let's get in now. And then how do we kind of like earn our investment back? Okay, let's get a famous person. Let's get Travis on it. Let's get Tyga on it, whatever. And I think doing that is their substitute for their inability to engineer the virality that TikTok is kind of premised upon. If they could do it themselves, they would. But I don't think they're there. I'm sure at some point it will become just painfully obvious that all the viral stuff on TikTok is purely engineered. But it still feels kind of like rowdy and reckless right now. So Karen, you don't look at TikTok at all, right? Not really.
Not often, because it demands your full attention. And I mostly look at my phone while I'm watching The Real Housewives of every city.
Your only media consumption is Real Housewives and Slack.
It's true. If there's if there's a sound on thing on Instagram, I'm like, sorry, I'm not going to. There's no way I can interrupt The Real Housewives of Atlanta with this right now. So it can't happen. But I'm intrigued by it, you know, and I am aware of its first, you know, the first big success, I presume, was Lil Nas X.
Yeah. The thing with Lil Nas X that feels like such a naive time, right? So
it
we're
does,
almost
yes.
almost like 2 years ago at this point, and it just feels like so naive. It feels like we were all so young then. And Lil Nas X being able to have a successful viral trend on TikTok that then manifested as like a real song that then manifested the success of the actual song, which then became a major label record deal, which then became a big remix, which then became the number one song in the country for possibly still today. I don't know. At the time, that seemed so novel. It seemed like innocent. And it was like, wow.
It seemed cute and exciting, which meant we knew that it was about to be corrupted.
Exactly. And the thing that I think we couldn't have totally understood in that moment, I mean, you remember when the Billy Ray Cyrus remix comes out, which is obviously the main version of the song that everybody knows, but it's technically a remix. When that version comes out, it's like, ah, you know, great pop breakthrough, savvy genre collision, middle finger to the Billboard country chart, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's good copy. It's good narrative. And then they kept extending it. There's the version with Mason Ramsey and Young Thug, very inspired. Not a great song, but like very inspired. There's the BTS version, right?
I would call that,
Soul yes. Town Road, I think it's called. Maybe we should listen to that. Because like, we don't need to hear the original. Let's listen to the BTS remix of Old Town. Nobody tell me nothing. You can't tell me nothing. I got the homies in my back. Yeah. Have you heard of that? Yeah. Homies made still from Korea. They the bias. Riding to the farm. Huh. Riding on the car. Huh. We gon' get your money with my homie in your back. And the thing that presaged is literally what every single record label is doing with any viral hit that they can get their hands on right now. At the time, it seemed like a little bit of a, you know, gimmick is, I mean, it's like, yes, it was a gimmick, but it was like, this will never happen again. Like, what are the odds? Some crazy thing happens on TikTok and then a famous person gets on it and then another famous person like that. What? Crazy.
So take us by the hand and walk us to the next truly significant one.
Well, in terms of 2020, the two that really jump out for 2020 are Savage Love and the Savage Remix. So Megan Thee Stallion and Beyonce for the Savage Remix, Josh 685 and Jason Derulo, and later a BTS remix for Savage Love. What those represent are two different paths towards TikTok virality and then kind of global universality. Let's start with Megan. Savage, I don't want to swear to this, but I don't think Savage itself was a single in like the classic single sense. I don't think so. But what happened is it ended up being the soundtrack for like a fairly big dance trend on TikTok, which then had the kind of like reverse effect of making the song even more popular. So Savage, the TikTok trend is happening, and then Savage, the song, starts to become a radio force. Now, of course, Megan Thee Stallion's career is already on the rise. She's already a bit of a cult figure.
Can I ask you for 1 second, though, to pause and explain, because a song like Savage is so uniquely suited for TikTok. And like, I understand why, but maybe not everybody understands why. My knowledge of TikTok, I understand why, but perhaps we should explain to perhaps, I know my mom is listening. Hi, mom. Explain to her why. She's very loyal.
Great.
What is it about the tempo and the cuts and the language of this that makes it so suited?
Look, the video snippets on TikTok, they could be up to a minute, but like an optimal, memeable, shareable audio piece, it's maybe like 15, 20, 25 seconds, right? And what happens on TikTok is TikTok, you have these like mini, I don't want to call them films, but you have videos that are short, but that take you through a lot of different phases or a lot of different perspectives or angles or emotions or whatnot. Transitions, if you want. And so Savage is a song where at the chorus, Megan is naming different positions, different characteristics.
Moods, I would suggest.
Yes, moods, yes. And so what's happening in that is each one of those ends up being a pivot point for a transition in a dance. So the dance routine that ends up becoming the popular dance routine for Savage, each little maneuver tells part of the story of the song. And because there's like 5 or 6 or 7 different moods or poses during the video, it ends up being very signature and very catchy. Now, obviously, Megan is a huge fan base walking in the door. So there are people excited about Megan who would want to do a dance to a Megan song. That's already built in. But the nature of that song, I don't know if it was written with TikTok virality in mind or if it just so happened that TikTok virality took to it. But if you have a clip like that where there are, say, 6, 7, 8 discrete things that are happening that can all be conveyed through like messaging dance, that's almost a guarantee for success on TikTok. TikTok videos that work really well are often storytelling, even if they're through dance purely. They're storytelling. Even if you were to watch the dance without hearing the song, you could kind of like understand the messaging of the dance. You know, it's a little like So You Think You Can Dance-y with it, but yes.
I was going to say, yeah, so they rely on a couple of things that for this formula that makes it so effective, right? It's like a beat with a long enough amount of air in it for somebody to wear something, say something, convey something visual, right? They are like little films, like just like quick cuts. And obviously, these were all really heavily influenced by Vine, R.I.P. Vine.
Oh, of course. Absolutely. Vine, obviously, it was a big, important home for viral dance and also a home for viral comedy. And one of the things I think TikTok does so well, and it's maybe just because it's a slightly more mature platform, we're a little bit further along in like the mechanism of internet content, is often dance and comedy or dance and drama are really interwoven very well. So the dance that's a success for Savage is also a bit of a comedy routine, right? It's also a bit of a performance, and it's not simply people showing off. Like, this is kind of where like the Charli D'Amelio school of dance is like not exactly what I think TikTok is best at, even though it's obviously very popular. She is not a particularly theatrical dance performer. She's like really solid and she like nails a lot of the moves. She's not very theatrical and there's not a lot of meta narrative in her dance. Whereas I think the best viral TikTok dance routines have additional layers of comedy or performance kind of like baked into them.
Right. I was going to say, like, it's actually kind of vaudevillian in a way where you're also communicating a lot because you're relying on the audio of the songs. You're relying on communicating a lot with your face. It's kind of mimey in a way.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm going to make sure we talk about this as anciently as humanly possible.
That's fine. No, but that's good because I think it's helpful. And also I think some of the funny TikTok, like there's always like the thing about TikTok is like, there's content, then there's reaction content, there's meta content, you know, there's so many different layers of the content. And like, there are so many good dance routine videos that are people doing it super straight faced in reaction to the hyper vaudevillian stuff, or doing it super sad faced, be like, I'm depressed today, but I'm still like doing, I'm hitting the renegade, you know, like, so even if you're seeing a one video, that's a 15-second video, if you watch and engage with the app a lot, you understand that that video is in conversation with thousands of other videos that are on the app. And even if you haven't seen all thousands of those videos, you do understand, oh, okay, in the arc of where this content farm is going, it's like we're past literalism, we're past reaction and commentary, you know, we're into mood theater. We're on the third or fourth tier of content. So like, I'm sure, I mean, I can't remember off the top of my head, but I definitely saw good savage dances done by people who were also had captions about being depressed or captions about having a terrible day or something along those lines. That all works in this context.
Okay. Well, now I've thoroughly derailed you. So we were talking about savage before I asked you about all this. So I'm going to put us back on that track where we were describing how savage became, well, how Beyoncé joined Savage, essentially. And then we'll talk about Mr. Derulo.
Right. So what happens is Savage, the snippet, ends up with an important dance trend, which then reinvigorates Savage, the song. Savage, the song, gets a little bit of burn out in the real world on radio or who knows what else, but out in like more traditional platforms. Megan has a pre-existing relationship with Beyoncé. Beyoncé, very savvy, probably looking for an entry point into TikTok without having to, God forbid, make an account or do a dance or anything like that.
Manufacture her own thing.
Yes. I can't imagine that anybody who works for Beyoncé ever was like, you should start a TikTok account. Like, I don't think that conversation ever happened. But this is a perfect way for Beyoncé to become part of this thing. And so she gets on the Savage remix and it's like kind of very bawdy verse. She's rapping. She's mostly rapping. It's a great way for her to like pay homage to this viral sensation and also kind of bring herself to the level while also very, very blatantly amplifying this thing, which even though Megan Thee Stallion is like a famous, well-known person, I don't think Megan Thee Stallion ends up with a Grammy nomination for Record of the Year without Beyoncé hopping on this and turning it into a bigger phenomenon. I don't think that happens. I'm a savage.
Hips tick tock when I dance. On that demon time, she might start her OnlyFans. Okay, so that well illustrates for me the impact of a large star jumping into something on TikTok already. But the Jason Derulo thing.
Yeah, that's one path.
A bit different, right?
Yeah, so basically, with Meg and Beyoncé, that is the app telling the universe something and then like a superstar arriving, right? In like a very formal, all parties are aligned in their interests kind of way. What happened with Derulo and Joss685? So Joss685 is in New Zealand. He's in high school. He's Polynesian and he makes something, an instrumental. They're called Siren Jams.
Can we listen to his original beat
now? I would love to listen to the original laxed siren beat.
Are you impressed with this pseudo hosting I'm doing?
Yeah, I am. You're really doing it.
Pedro, you're doing it. Do you appreciate this?
Yeah. I'm into it.
Carry on.
So this is a song that, according to Josh, when I interviewed him over the summer, last summer, he did not put on TikTok, but somehow made it to TikTok and became a soundtrack to like a kind of a dance routine that was like maybe not as involved as the Savage dance routine, but still like a very popular one. The thing that I was most excited about when I came across it was how global it was. You know, the trend was loosely called the culture dance trend. So you have people dressed in the garb of where they are from. So you have people from all continents, all kinds of countries doing this kind of unifying dance. Now, instead of that reflecting back onto Josh 685, what happens is a little bit strange. Jason Derulo, who was a pop R&B sort of star from the early 2010s.
Pause for Pedro to play Jason Derulo saying Jason Derulo, please. Jason Derulo. Okay, now carry on.
We regret to inform you that Jason Derulo has fallen down the steps of TikTok. Jason Derulo, I think probably thinking he's a big guy, and he's actually kind of popular on TikTok on his own accord, like not from a musical perspective. He does these kind of like big budget TikToks. So he's actually like low key pretty popular on the app. Jason Derulo ends up stealing, in essence, the beat, turning it into a song called Savage Love and putting it on his YouTube, I think. I mean, he also talked about it on TikTok, but basically was like, this is my song. And didn't seem to be in touch with Josh 685. Like, basically, it was just like, I'm the big guy. This is my song. You know, this belongs to me now. And it was like a little bit messy logistically there for a while. But ultimately, Josh 685 signs a deal. Lawyers get to lawyering. And the song ends up becoming Josh 685 featuring Jason Derulo. And it ends up as the number one song in the country after a remix featuring, BTS, a big act of generosity from BTS.
Well, let's hear it. Which one do you want to hear? With or without?
I want to hear the BTS version.
My good personal friends, yes. BTS.
Yes, okay. I would like to hear their version. Every night and every day, I try to make you stay, but you're a savage love. There's somebody break your heart.
This podcast is supported by Spotify. President Barack Obama and Bruce Springsteen have a new podcast. And right now, you can listen to Renegades Born in the USA exclusively on Spotify. In the podcast, longtime friends President Obama and Springsteen sit down to discuss the country that's given them both so much, chronicle the stories of its people, and connect their own search for meaning, truth, and community with a larger story of America. Listen free, only on Spotify.
Hi, I'm David Leonhardt, and I'm a senior writer at The New York Times. I also spend a lot of time reading journalism, and there is nothing I appreciate more than a story that cuts through the jargon and complexity of a big subject so that I can really understand it. That's the kind of journalism I've tried to do myself during my 2 decades as a reporter, a columnist, and an editor at The Times. Now, every weekday morning, I can be your personal guide to the news with an email that walks you through the day's biggest stories and the unexpected ones. An email that helps you make sense of the pandemic and the vaccines, the Biden administration, the economy, cultural trends, and much more. The newsletter is called The Morning. You can sign up at nytimes.com/The Morning. I'll see you in your inbox.
So from a distance, those two examples that we're talking about seem like they took the same path, but they're not exactly the same because the power dynamics are a little bit different. But what they end up having in common, and I think this is true less for the Jason Derulo intrusion and more for the BTS arrival, is using BTS to kind of like juke the stats of Savage Love to put it over the top and get it to the number one spot. That's a savvy record label move, right? To have Beyonce arrive on Savage to make it basically like an iconic song across demographics. I don't know if that's like a record label move. I think Beyonce does whatever Beyonce wants to do, but it's also leveraging this star power to turn Savage, the song, into this bigger thing. And I think what those two songs are the most successful example of is something we have seen dozens of times during the last like 9 months.
On TikTok.
On TikTok and then out in the real world. So like, I would love to run through a few examples.
We're going to say them and then we'll hear them?
Yes, I think so. Okay. So y'all may remember Let's Link, which was put out by a rapper named Huheem. There are actually 2 remixes to this song, one of which features Tyga and Lil Mosey. But let's not play that one because we'll get back to Tyga. The other one features my friend and yours, PP Cocaine. Let's listen to the Let's Link remix with PP Cocaine.
Let's link. It's a pink. Give us Mickey Link so you have a little free. Baby, use it for the streets. Get nasty in the streets. And I'm like an athlete. I'll give you a treat. Ha!
Another one that caused me kind of like no end of consternation when I heard it was the Nicki Minaj remix of Sada Baby's Whole Lotta Choppas. I'm not sure what their relationship was prior to doing this song together. I'm not sure if there was one. It felt very opportunistic. And also from a rapping perspective, it doesn't that seem to be like an optimal pairing. And yet, Whole Lotta Choppas remix featuring Nicki Minaj is like a real thing that happened. Let's maybe listen to just a touch.
You were saying that you have perhaps a more cynical view of Nicki Minaj's role on this Sada Baby track.
Yeah, it's I don't know if the cynicism is Nicki specific or if it's label specific. These things are worked out by committee, right? Like that's sort of why the reason I opened with the Adderall Corvette remix, because it's like the one of these where I was like, oh, like they might be friends. Like they might know each other. Like Uzi showed up for a video shoot with Pop Hunna, you know, and they look like they're having just the grandest old time together. And like Uzi's like a bit of an eccentric and a weirdo. So like Uzi's as likely to hang out with a relatively unknown rapper as with a super well-known rapper. So it makes sense. But a lot of these other ones don't make loads of sense. It just like scratches me the weird way. Like Uzi also appeared on, there's a song called Party Girl by Stay Solid Rocky. And there's a remix of Party Girl with Uzi. It's fine, but like doesn't have that same kind of like exuberance of like, I'm here because I like to be here as the Pop Hunna remix.
Is the music industry's role or means of involving themselves in TikTok, is it measurably different than the ways that it has tried to be involved in other platforms? Are you seeing aesthetic differences?
Because TikTok feels kind of ungovernable at the moment, and I should say this with a caveat, which is like one thing I've learned is like there's any number of like low or mid-level or small-level marketing companies that are devoted to kind of like trying to get viral trends to pop off. And like, you know, yeah, you don't start with Charli D'Amelio. You start with influencers who have 10,000 followers or 20,000 followers, or you pay the choreographer to come up with a cool dance and hope it kind of takes off. I understand that those things are happening, but I imagine for every one of those that works, there's probably two or three or four of them that don't work. So, you know, I don't want to ignore the role of like the attempted engineering, just more that TikTok doesn't necessarily function in a way that's completely easy to reverse engineer and kind of make work for you.
Right. But it is one of the first like social platforms where the industry can actually be involved on an aesthetic level, right? I mean, like when you have a Facebook or a Twitter or an Instagram, I guess Instagram's different. It's less about creativity than just simple synergy or promotion. You know, it reminds me of when major labels were hiring kids to write blog posts about songs back in the old days, you know, but it's like, this is the first, I mean, I could be wrong, but it seems like one of the first truly creative platforms where the long arm of the industry is impacting the actual aesthetic process.
Yes.
Like you can put a song on SoundCloud, you can put a song on Spotify, but to actually create something feels like that's a shift.
Well, and also, I mean, this is something that came up also last year, and I think is still kind of happening, where TikTok is being used sort of as a sounding board for ideas. And this is not completely unheard of. Like, I think if you go back to the 90s, like you'd be listening to Hot 97 and you hear like a rapper freestyle a verse, quote unquote, freestyle a verse. And really what they were doing was kind of like workshopping it for like a later song. Or maybe it was on a song that was not out yet. And, you know, they kind of wanted to test it out in public. Right. So it's not like there haven't been mechanisms for artists to like sample out a song and be like, hey, I wonder what people think of it. Let me try to find out. But TikTok really does smooth that process. I mean, last year, 2C Slide, that piece I wrote about 2C Slide.
Remind the listeners what you're talking about, though.
Sorry, Karen. I was just talking to you. I know you read that piece.
It feels like we're just on the phone having a chat. But yeah, you know.
I know you read the damn piece.
I definitely did.
So last year I did a piece about Drake's 2C Slide RIP to that song. The Kid Laroi's Addison Rae and Tyga's Bored in the House. And what that struck me as, and this is kind of like 3 months into quarantine, maybe 4 months into quarantine, where people are really starting to take to TikTok in droves, like really taking to TikTok. And what each of those songs were was a slightly different iteration on the I'm going to float an idea on TikTok. And oh my God, it's going to turn into a song. So for the Kid Laroi, he has like kind of a hook that name checks Addison Rae. Let's actually listen to that.
I need a bad Addison Rae. The shawty the baddest. She got a way. The shawty is savage. The shawty don't play. I need a bad shawty. I need some bad Addison Rae. I need a bad.
So he name checks Addison Rae, who's like one of the most famous dance creators on the app. And then he has to turn it into a real song because it gets really popular on TikTok. With Tyga, who ended up being like a real successful kind of like, I don't want to say bottom feeder because I think that's ungenerous, but he was like an astute reader of TikTok trends and really hopping on things. He took what was kind of like a musical comedy clip from this guy, Curtis Roach, about being bored in the house and turned it into a song, like an actual song.
I'm a big fan of that. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. And like kind of portended everything that we're talking about now. Tyga was really kind of very early on it. And then Drake, maybe like slightly more cynically, had a snippet of a song that he sent to a well-known dancer and said, basically, can you come up with a dance for this? And then that dance came out when the song itself came out. So Drake kind of has this built-in, oh, you like the song on TikTok? Great. The dance already exists. He doesn't have to wait for some choreographer to come up with a cool dance. He built the dance into the song. And when we talk about TikTok influencing songwriting, he literally just wrote a dance hook. You know, like that's the hook of the song. It's like, it's the hokey pokey.
You put your right foot in, you put your right foot out.
Drake was probably the highest profile person to just realize that that was going to be, certainly for that era of quarantine, that's how people were going to be engaging with music and absorbing music and kind of giving them the tools that they needed to be able to listen to it, quote unquote, the right way. So Tuesday Slide is like obviously a song written for and perhaps by TikTok, but Drake seems to be, or at least seems to have TikTok on his mind a little bit. And if you listen, Karen, to this last Drake song, the one that came out a few days ago, well, there's a few songs, but the What's Next, which is like the main single, quote unquote, from that three pack of songs that came out, that hook really strikes me as a TikTok hook. Summer All I Did Was Rest, New Year's All I Did Was Stretch, Valentine's Day I Had Sex. That just seems like a classic TikTok transition. It does turn out that that set of lyrics was actually pulled from like a leak from an older Drake song that never came out. So maybe it wasn't totally inspired by TikTok, but it does seem like the type of thing that could launch 1,000 videos. Now, that said, I did look on TikTok and I did see Lizzo making a funny video to this, but I did not see a lot of people having picked up on it. But who knows? Maybe podcast listeners can start making TikTok videos to this.
Well, summer all I did was rest, okay? And New Year's all I did was stretch, okay? And Valentine's Day I had sex, okay? We'll see what's about to happen next, okay? 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 We'll see what's about to happen next, okay? 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 We'll see what's about to happen. Hey, hey, we'll see what's about to happen.
You remember in 2019, Kaylee Shore was someone who put out a record. She was like a young country pop singer that I really liked. Kaylee Shore recently did a thing where she put up on her TikTok, I think it was like a verse or maybe a verse and a chorus of a song about like an ex-friend of hers. And it got a very, very big reaction. And then she's turned around and like made a full song out of it and now put it out as an actual song. Maybe we should listen to that.
Yeah.
Let's take a listen to that. It's called Amy.
What is it about this that you like?
What is it about the logistics that I like, or what is it about the music that I like?
Well, both. I mean, actually, this is a question. Do you like all of this music?
Okay. I'll answer that in two parts. I think
I would be disappointed if you didn't.
I feel like what TikTok has done, and this recent Kaylee Shore thing is like a good example of that, right? Like, I think what TikTok has done is you're communing directly with people who are passionate about you by in terms of your followers. And potentially, if you have some viral traction, you're being exposed like on the most intimate platform there is, which is your phone. It's not the computer. It's not the television. It's not the radio. It's your phone. And basically, that kind of focus grouping, if you put something out and it comes from, you know, and it's not a cynical thing, if it comes from like your creative spirit and it gets immediate good feedback, I like that that can then be the spark to then send you into the studio to make a finished product, to put it out in the world. Look, rather than having it kind of like wear tested by A&Rs and people at record labels, why wouldn't you have a song wear tested by the people who are ostensibly your consumers, who are your fans? I like that. That makes me happy. As far as like, is every song in this category a success? No, of course not. I like Addison Rae as a song. I think Bored in the House is funny. I don't know if I would ever like listen to it as a song. Juicy Slide is like, that's mixed. You know, we talked about some of these remixes, like, you know, the Sada Baby thing. I'm not sure. I mean, literally, I'm just going to read you. We're not going to listen to all these, but like, I'm going to read you a bunch of these remixes. So Claire Rosencrantz, Backyard Boy, which was like a big hit last year. There's a version of it with some singer named Jeremy Zucker. That's on her official EP release. You know, we don't necessarily think of 24K Golden and Ian Dior's Mood as a TikTok song, but it was for sure a very, very big TikTok song.
I do like that.
And there's
that song.
A kind of like a big barfy major label remix with Justin Bieber and J Balvin that literally adds nothing to the song. It's useless, totally useless. Ash Nico had a big record. It's called Daisy. There's a remix with Hatsune Miku. It's good. I don't know if it's more popular than the original, but I'm glad it exists. Megan Thee Stallion's interesting because Megan is both like the famous person who can show up on somebody else's remix and also the less famous person who needs Beyonce to kind of come and be on her song. So there's a song called Thick by DJ Chose, and she's on the remix of Thick. I think it's actually pretty good. It's like a good Megan sex rap. Oh, let's listen to Vito. Oh, we're going to have to listen to Vito. So Vito is an R&B singer who had one of my favorite songs last year. It was a TikTok hit. It's called You Got It. I didn't even know that this existed until this remix existed until I did the research. But there's a remix of You Got It with Young Dolph. We should definitely listen to the Young Dolph verse on this You Got It remix. This is Vito, You Got It featuring Young Dolph.
It's Vito, baby.
Uh-huh. Baby, you got it. You look like a goddess. You got me mesmerized just by your body. Hey. Here, spread your wings and take off like a rocket. Yeah. Girl, this your world. I can't do nothing about it. Find me another one like you, I doubt it. That so good, I went by her, I out it. It's so good that I can't live without it. Shopper's Bridge when we in Cali. Hey, she got...
The list goes on. Ty Vertis, Stuck in the Middle. There's a Kiana Lede remix. Dream Girl by Ir Saiz. There's... four different remixes on this. There's an EP of remixes. Sean Paul's on it. Raul Alejandro. It just goes on. Say Grace, which has a bleepable title, Boys Ain't. There's two Say Grace remixes. One has Flo Millie on it, which is really good. We have the number one song of 2020, according to John Perellis, Avenue Beats F2020, which we have talked about on podcast before. This remix with Jesse Reyes, I actually think is good. I don't know if it adds anything to the original, but I think it's good. Do you like that song?
I do like that song. It was on both of your year-end lists, but I think only one of you included the remix, right?
I put the remix. JP had the original. No, I'm sorry. JP had the remix. I had the original. That's what I think.
These are the different flavors of the New York Times pop critic.
Yes, exactly. That's correct.
Are any of these things bad or harmful?
You mean in terms of like to the younger artist?
Yes, but also just like as a... is this going to become a kind of means of production that eats up a large chunk of the industry?
Well, okay. So one thing that I wrote in that piece, and I just don't have a lot of clarity on, and actually if I know there are people who work for record labels who listen to podcasts, I'd be curious to know from their perspective, if you're signing a YNJ, if you're signing a DJ Chose, if you're signing Huheem, and you're signing them kind of off of TikTok virality, are they being signed to like 5-year deals? Are they being signed to 3-album deals? Are they being signed to like 4-song deals? You know, that's something I don't totally understand. Because if it's really them being signed to these kind of short-term, no protection kind of deals, I think it's super bad for them. It's super, super bad. Because what the label is telling you is, we're actually not investing in you as an artist. We're investing in the phenomenon. And yes, we have resources to deploy, right? Like, we can basically drop a super famous artist on your song. We can do that. That's what we have the power. That's the whole point. But we're doing that to squeeze, I guess, additional streaming revenue out of a song. Also, there is the hope, and this is really where Megan and Beyonce is kind of the gold standard, where Savage was like sort of a radio hit after it was a TikTok hit. But then Savage with Beyonce, I think, was a much bigger radio record than Savage on its own, I think. And so really what you're starting to see are two tiers of TikTok stars. TikTok stars who remain at like this level, and maybe they get a little bit of a boost from an appearance from a famous person. And then you have TikTok stars who are being like pulled into the next gravitational orbit, which is like mainstream radio, Spotify playlisting at a high level, stuff like that. I think there are not enough examples of that, and too many examples of the first thing. One thing that we talked about, I remember last year we did the podcast episode about avatars and pop star avatars, especially in the absence of actual concerts. And Alyssa from The Ringer was on the show, and in her piece about avatars, one of the people that she was talking about was Cookie Kawai. And Cookie Kawai is a Jersey club artist who had that song Vibe, If I Back It Up, which also has a Tyga remix. Unreal.
He's busy.
Honestly, Tyga. I turned the corner on Tyga in 2020. I'm pro. I'm just totally
he's
pro.
He's just trying to make a living, John.
He really is. He's on it, though. You know what I mean? Like, he's paying as close attention as I am. I got to give him credit. Or at least, like, his friend is. You know, I don't know if it's him, but, like, someone
Tyga, come on podcast.
Seriously. Tyga's a real A&R for the streets. So, Cookie Kawai is someone who, in Alyssa's piece, was doing this process where I think an avatar was being made, in part because what Cookie Kawai realized is that nobody knew who Cookie Kawai was. They knew what the snippet was.
Right.
They knew what the song was, but they didn't know anything about the person. And there was no way without touring to make that more widely known. So this avatar thing became a kind of proxy for that. I think there's way more artists in that camp. And I wonder if we're going to start looking at TikTok virality as kind of like what we used to think of as like a regional hit. Like, oh, this rock band's really popular in the Southwest. This country singer is like super popular in Texas or in Alabama. This rapper's only popular in Baton Rouge. Can we upstream it? I think that's what we're going to start to think of it. Like, TikTok is kind of like its own form of success, but it doesn't necessarily shape the larger conversations. Not yet, at least.
What do you think is next for this platform and the music industry? Is this just going to be another, I mean, like, year is young. Is this going to be a year filled with these remixes?
Yes, but I think the next thing, and we talked about this a little bit with Lil Huddy, who put out a song. Lil Huddy is Chase Hudson, who is one of the bigger TikTok influencers. He is now basically like a trash, emo, goth, pop punk, wannabe MGK attempted pop star.
Let's just linger on that for just one second. Okay. Okay. That's about as meta as it possibly gets. Wannabe MGK.
Yes. This is where we've arrived at in 2021. The idea that, like, if you're well-known on TikTok, like, you possibly can actually become an actual musician, since music is so baked into TikTok in the first place. You know, if you're popular on TikTok, you're probably, like, dance functional. You may not be like an expert dancer, but you're probably dance functional. So you are proximate to music. And if you're in LA, as a lot of these kids are, you're near the music business. We have not talked about Dixie D'Amelio. Dixie is Charlie's more sensible sister. You know, not that Charlie is not sensible, but Dixie is like the slightly wiser one, I think, of the two. Dixie has a record deal. She has a song called Be Happy. And I should say, I did not include this in my remixes piece. This was my original kicker to the remixes piece.
Are you going to read us some?
I'm not going to read it to you, but okay. it was my original kicker. I have like a couple paragraphs about the Dixie D'Amelio song that didn't make it into the final version. It's called Be Happy. I do not think it's a good song. I think it's like genuinely a bad song. And there is a remix which does the same thing as all these other remixes, but yet can't quite yank this song out of the kind of muck that it is. And it features Black Bear and Lil Mosey. Maybe we should listen to just a touch of this so people know what we're talking about. I don't want to get up out of bed this season. All bad days walk away, leave me bleeding. It's f*** you and you. Today, f*** this pain I've been feeling. I've got the devil on my shoulder. Heart is getting colder. But I keep to myself. Anxiety been creeping, staring at the ceiling. But I don't need your help, cause are you saying this is not good, John? Is that what you're saying? Yeah. And I think there was a time where you sort of understood like, oh, someone's like going to have a little bit of viral fame. They're a little bit popping on YouTube. They're going to try to make music. Joe on Instagram today reposted Pop Culture Died in 2009 with like a little bit of a clip of when Kim Kardashian tried to make a song, right? Which I had totally forgotten about. But like, we've had these cycles where people who are successful in kind of social media ecosystems where they are being themselves, music is kind of the lowest hanging fruit of all the industries. It's easier to make a song than to make a TV show. It's easier to make a song than to make a film. So I think you're going to see more people in this space. I think Jaden Hostler is someone who's also doing this. You're going to see more people in this space trying to make the songs of their own. And I think, depending how it goes, they might start to crowd out the kind of like viral rap successes where a not very well-known rapper ends up having a hit and then, God willing, a Lil Uzi Vert remix, you know, 3, 6, 9 months down the road. I worry about that. I don't know how much of that I want to listen to.
So there's a potential that this year, this trend will peak and end at the same time.
Yes, I think it's totally possible. I also think that what's probably going to happen is the labels are playing catch up. Right? They're playing catch up. They're not out there injecting. I mean, I'm just looking, you know, Hood Baby, you know, they're not injecting that into the system. They're just like, wake you up one morning and being like, uh-oh, what do we do about this? How do we fit? Like, what, how do we get this? So I think what's going to happen is either the labels, you saw TikTok made a deal with Universal recently. I was looking at TikTok just before we started recording today, and I was actually pretty shocked at how many ads there were. I feel like even just in the last like week, maybe my feed is changing, but I'm just getting like way more ads in the last week or two than I have been. I think as TikTok becomes more and more in bed with the record labels, the incentive behind the scene will be to have the algorithm push more obvious stuff. And that's frustrating because the thing that's so good about TikTok is the unpredictability of the algorithm. And the minute the labels get their little grimy little pause on the algorithm and things start getting pushed that are label priorities, TikTok will cease to be interesting.
So we're perhaps in the golden era right now.
It does feel that way. And even though I have a lot of skepticism about like the remix approach, which is a lot of what we've been talking about today, even though I have a lot of skepticism, the thing that I sort of admire about it is it's, if I work at a label, I'm just like, yeah, I'm not in control of that. But the best thing I can do is I can throw Nicki Minaj on it and pray that radio plays it. That's the best thing I can do. And I kind of like that. Even though I think some of these remix opportunities are mismatches, I like the kind of like big label shrug of it, where it's just like, we don't know, man. Like, we don't know. We're just trying whatever now. It does feel like that. And I guess as someone who does not necessarily cheer for like big music industry stuff, you know, I like the arbitrariness is winning out, at least for these 6 months or 12 months.
Well, does it also seem like this was uniquely suited for the past 12 months where like most artists weren't really doing anything and this doesn't really demand any like, you know, physical interaction?
Yeah, I think it's part of it. And I think also it's like if you are a super successful Beyonce level, Nicki level, Uzi level artist, how are you to gain traction when all of the tools that are ordinarily what you use, which is to say like putting out albums that everybody listens to, going on tour, doing shows, like that's pretty much taken away. And if you're a little bit more established, it's not really in your bones to create virality anymore, right? Like virality kind of exists independently of superstardom, unless it's like the BTS ecosystem, which has its own kind of like closed off system of virality and like other stan ecosystems. But to me, this moment was very well suited to keeping successful people in their lane, which is to say like out of virality, and amplifying these unexpected things. That's what the last 12 months have been like. And so I think you may not see that set of circumstances replicated. You may not actually get to another place where the people in charge of what's really, really moving are completely obscure. That may not happen anymore. Because, look, I hope to be completely vaccinated soon. I hope you are completely vaccinated soon. I think we will all be out and like kind of replicating the things that we used to do 12 to 18 months ago. And I just think that this may end up being a weird blip in like the power balance.
John, you've given me a lot to think about here today. Perhaps you've changed lives. Perhaps you've changed my life. Maybe tonight, instead of watching the Bachelor finale or near finale, I'm not sure where we are, I will TikTok instead. It's very possible.
But you know what happened on The Bachelor, right? Like, you know,
no, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't ruin it.
Oh, okay. Oh my God.
I mean, I know, I don't really know. I don't read the spoilers. Although you did do a great piece on Reality Steve many years ago. Shout out that piece.
Love to be on top of all the trends.
Well, it was a pleasure, John. Thank you for asking me to come here and speak to you as though we were having a regular editor-writer conversation about TikTok. I hope I have helped you elucidate some of your opinions.
I hope so, too. Thanks for pinch hitting. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Get on the Facebook group. Email us, podcast@nytimes.com. Hell, if we go back on Clubhouse, come and talk to us on Clubhouse. Subscribe to podcasts anywhere you get your audio content. Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, et cetera, et cetera. Our producer is Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. Let's go out with a remix that we haven't listened to yet of a song that I like quite a bit. This is Rags to Riches 2 off of the Rod Wave original. Here's the remix featuring Lil Baby.
I went from rags to riches. I still go back to the trenches. We had to smash some. No silver spoons, we had plastic utensils. He just came home, he still packing his pistol. Die in these streets or get saved by the system or get you some millions. My lifestyle is vicious. These hoes ain't gonna miss you. They f*** on your partner, act like they forgot you. That shit, yeah, you sick. My girl, she the riddest. I know how to pick them. I know what I did. I need you to back with me. I know she get up.